You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 65 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Boulevard Park, Washington for a special edition of the Peltoncast.
Very special edition.
We are joined this week by, it's our first four-man pod since the Super Bowl 48 recap.
Yes.
And who do we have here today?
You want me to introduce them?
Yeah.
Well, I thought this was all
I was
you.
Talking a lot.
So we have with us two special guests today. First, all the way from Nashville, Tennessee, we have Reese Lazarus.
Hello.
So this is continuing Music Month here on the Peltoncast. Reese Lazarus, we're going to be talking music with. He's a member of the band Bully, who just signed a Sub Pop, and is also from Seattle, Washington.
Vashon, Washington.
there's a big difference.
And shout out to Vashon.
Also have with us, all the way from SeaTac, we have Chris Smith.
Hello.
So we're having to share. We share mics every week on the podcast.
That's a thing now. Yes.
But this is our first ever four-man pod. I feel like we need to get into it because we have so much to cover.
We have a lot to get to. And that's going to start with our beer tonight. We were at Loretta's previously.
Yes.
Official bar of the Peltoncast, even though they don't actually sponsor us. And obviously, many of us were drinking Rainier Tall Boys there.
Yes.
As one does at Loretta's. And now, to chase that, we've got a little R&R.
Yes.
As we drank earlier on the podcast, this is the collaboration between Rubens Brews and Rainier to create a craft pilsner, a very different thing for Rainier and an opportunity for Rubens to work with a legendary Seattle brewery.
I'm pretty excited because I haven't had this yet.
Yeah, I've had it a couple times now, but I found this at Costco over the weekend. They've got the 22-ounce bottles there for sale for $4.79. So check that out at Costco. That was an ad for Costco, basically. I don't know why.
I've had the Northwest Mountain Pale Ale or whatever that Rainier.
You know, this
out.
Is way better than that. No, that was not good.
And also, I was saying, you know, we're drinking through the Sierra Nevada Beer Camp, but we have a guest here with us who is a Rainier beer drinking guest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was a little bit stressed out that I was going to have to waste, you know, one of my beer drinking opportunities in Seattle. Yes. On something not Rainier. So I'm very pleased that we are drinking a Rainier beer.
You had to consider the alternative cost.
I know, my alternative cost was, it was stressing me out last night.
I'm happy to know that that's what you were thinking about. Should we start with, we want to talk a little bit more about you being in Seattle and Bully. But before then, do we want to talk this week's burger? Because it might be the quintessential Seattle burger.
It is undoubtedly the quintessential Seattle burger. And we saved, I don't know if I'm necessarily want to say the best for last. We saved the most important for last.
Yes.
This is our final regular season review in the search for Seattle.
And are you
best
going
burger.
To unveil the bracket here after this conversation?
You still had some qualms about the bracket, but I suppose I am.
I'll air them, but okay.
And that is, of course, Dick's Drive-In Restaurants.
Yes.
So we went there on Friday during block party, and I enjoyed Dick's.
You're at a loss for words.
I am at a loss.
All
for
you could say was you enjoyed Dick's.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, though. I have such a hard time rating Dick's on the scale that we have used for the other burgers. Did you feel the same way?
I feel like it's, what, 60 years? How can you...
And that's the thing, is like, I feel like a lot of people are going to expect us to put Dick's number one, is they probably should.
But I can't put it number one. What did you go with first?
I went with two deluxes and a cheese, and it turns out that that is actually too much for me to eat now.
I was going to say, so many burgers.
What put it over the top? Was it the cheeseburger or the second deluxe?
I mean, what I like about getting the cheeseburger in there with the deluxe is it's a little bit different flavor. You get the ketchup. It contrasts with the special sauce of the deluxe. That's why that's always been my go-to order.
Yes.
And I don't like Dick's fries, I think we've discussed on this podcast.
I just...
They're too
pretty good fries.
They're too greasy.
To me, they're the number one fries that we've had.
Wow. We have wildly different fry tastes. I just don't know what to say. But the not eating fries gives me opportunity to eat more burgers.
Yes.
That's the important thing here. So
I went with the two deluxes and fries,
mm-hmm.
which I think was a pretty solid order because they are the best fries that we've had.
Are we in agreement that the deluxe is the go-to burger at Dick's?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Sure.
We talked about this a little.
You're a vegetarian.
I've eaten Dick's in my life. I am currently a vegetarian, but I've had the Dick's deluxe before, and I will submit that.
Yeah, we've talked about this with Kevin Alexander on our Seattle Burger special about how he reviewed the cheeseburger when he was going through Seattle Burgers because he was trying to rate, you know, basically the most standard burger across all restaurants he was going to.
Yes, and if I have a lot of problems with you right now, I have even more problems with him in this moment.
He had Dick's very low. And I think
near the bottom.
I mean, we were able to confront him about this in person. Or not
you
in person, but on
get
a podcast.
The main burger of the place.
Which the cheeseburger is not.
It is not. No, it's a secondary burger.
It's a very plain burger. I mean, if he's comparing the Dick's cheeseburger to Unita Burger or to the Tavern Burger, which, by the way, we just had, and it was excellent.
Delicious as always.
It was so good.
Six between the four of us? Yeah.
No, there was seven, right?
Yeah. Seven?
There one. You all had two.
Yeah. It could have been a clean eight.
I will submit the Veggie Tavern for my favorite veggie burger in Seattle. I know that is not anything related to this.
I mean, there may be a listener to this podcast for whom that is relevant. So,
but okay,
good to have that submitted.
Dick's Burgers. Number one, the best special sauce we have had of any burger bar none. Not even close.
I don't know if I would say it's not even close.
Not even close.
You know what's weird about Dick's Burgers is how well they managed to make the lettuce taste with the special sauce. I feel like that's a real accomplishment.
Yeah, it's basically perfect. I mean, here's the thing, is you're not getting a lot from the patty. It's just there, right?
But it's not taking away anything.
Yes, I would describe it as cooked very well, right?
It's thoroughly cooked.
This is not a $41 undercooked burger.
It is not. We're going to borrow that in a second.
But the cheese and the special sauce together with the lettuce and the grilled bun, it is an excellent burger.
Can I give you my Dick's Deluxe recommendation?
Okay.
That you need to separate the top patty and the top bun from the lower patty and the lower bun and reverse it to make sure that you have full coverage of the entire bun.
And, you're gonna have to what? Do some diagrams here.
I literally just scratched my head.
Because what, the fact that what do you have to do?
Typically, they tend to be like over to one side.
You're saying because the two burger patties touch each other? You're going to pick it up and even them out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that way you get full coverage. Okay. That is my
full coverage.
So we're not talking about an Oreo situation here where then you lick.
No, don't eat them separately. No. No, nothing like that. You're just putting them back together and eating it from there. The cheese at Dick's.
It's perfect.
Outstanding. Any other takeaways on the Dick's box?
I would say the only negative thing about Dick's is that it's so the same. You can't get a special order. You can't take anything off. You can't add anything.
I don't know why you'd want to do that.
I don't. To me, that's kind of part of the magic of Dick's.
I agree, but also when you look at all the other burger places you guys have been to, there's not a single other one where you have to get this specific, exact, same thing every time.
Which is why I would not rate it as the top burger in Seattle. Well, although I guess it's the same for Loretta's. I'm not getting any substitutions on a Tavern Burger.
I mean, theoretically, you could. Again, you wouldn't want to. What was your rating for this
burger? I rated it a 90.
I rated it a 93.
I would give Dick's an 89.
Do you want to rate the veggie burger? We've gotten four.
Does Dick's have a veggie burger?
No, not actually.
Wait, what happened?
This is when
how long have I been gone?
Take it home.
I mean,
make your own veggie burger. You have to change the orientation of it.
Don't be alarmed. They do accept cards now.
Okay.
So you have been gone that long.
Okay.
But no veggie burger on the menu.
Okay. You went to the Capitol Hill location?
Yes.
Did we sit down? Did we walk and take and
stand
and eat? Stand and eat? Okay.
Yeah. Standing at the counter.
Yep.
During Capitol Block Party, which I highly recommend.
I will say my like whole Dick's like concept is thrown off by the fact that we almost exclusively as kids went to the Queen Anne Dick's and where they actually have it's an actual sit down restaurant.
That's my favorite Dick's.
Oh, it's by far the best Dick's.
Great Dick's. My new favorite Dick's will be whatever Dick's goes in the South End.
So an update on that. An update on that.
South End, air quotes.
Still no word on a location.
Wow, hurry up,
the South End Dick's, which is scheduled scheduled to open in the fall or winter of 2018. Stay tuned to the Peltoncast for continuing coverage.
Have a lot of coverage. You think we talk about the arena a lot? just wait till you hear how much we talk about the South End Dick's.
Standard weekly segment as construction goes on.
Okay, so we've talked about Dick's. It's clearly in our top eight, right?
Obviously.
Do you want to run through what our elite eight of burgers in Seattle will be and the plans from here going forward? This is the moment.
All right. So mostly I went with our combined ratings, but there was a little art to this. Mm. First off, my rating for Loretta's was just wrong.
It was totally wrong.
It was wrong. I admit that it was wrong. Look.
What did you give Loretta's?
I gave it an 87. I don't
whoa,
even want to say that.
Seven.
I don't even want to
I just had it. I would probably give it a 95.
I was 95. Going to re-rate it a 95, which is higher than you gave it. You gave it a 93.
Well, I mean, I gave it a 93, which I believe was my top score.
I don't think that's true.
It was my top score, at least tied for my top score. You gave it an 87, which is egregious.
It is egregious.
You need to be held accountable for this.
I mean, I don't know what you're going to do to me for this, but...
You're off the podcast.
Oh, wow.
There'll be nobody with the last name Pelton on this podcast.
You're going to bring in Mom to replace me? You gave Lil Woody's a 94.
Okay, so and it, you gave it was right there.
The Swinery and Loretta's both a 93.
Okay, but I don't feel bad about my rating for...
You shouldn't.
Loretta's top.
I should feel bad.
An 87. I mean, you had
I
it
shouldn't
behind
do.
One. So you're changing your grade. You're going back.
And that's why Loretta's is now the number one seed in
okay.
the Pelton cast.
I mean... I'll accept
tournament.
It because they should be the number one seed, but I'm still a little bit skeptical here.
The number two seed will be Lil Woody's, which had the highest combined score at 188. Both of us gave it a 94. The number three seed, I don't know if the math actually works out here. No, I guess it does. Number three seed will
especially be... Especially with that 95. Wait, no, that was Loretta's. Never mind.
Number three seed will be Dick's.
Okay.
Number four, Red Mill. Number five, Unitaburger. That 4-5 matchup is going to be a real tough one.
Yes.
Number six, Zippy's Giant Burgers. Number seven, Swinery Meats.
What is the 6-3 matchup?
That's Zippy's versus Dick's.
Oh, man, that's going to be a hard one.
I know. And then eight, the Great State Burger. So the matchup, week one will have the 1-8 matchup, Loretta's versus Great State, where Chris will be joining us, is our third Pelton
yes.
brother to help make that evaluation.
I better get me a Great State Burger.
You just had a tavern burger and it got a 95, so you better come to the table here, Great State.
Yeah, you got a week to go try that. Week two will have Lil Woody's versus Swinery.
Okay, which I'm excited about all these matchups. When we first discussed it and we were doing it just statistically based before you did your Andy Benoit eye test only changing
easy
of the burgers.
Now. Easy.
But, you initially had Russell Wilson rated as like the 222nd best player in the NFL. But when we're going back, you did your eye test changing of it. I like the idea of Loretta's as a dark horse. I think it was a number 6 or 7 seed initially.
Well, also, just it made more sense for us to review it next week because we just went there. It was convenient.
Oh, I'm going there again.
I've been there 2 weeks in a row now. Week three will be Dick's versus Zippy's. And then week four, the final quarterfinal matchup, Red Mill versus Unita. I think that one could go either way.
Yeah, I'm excited for a lot of these.
I'm very excited to get this going. So stay tuned for that. While we're on the topic of burgers, though, so many people reached out to us about this story last week in the New York edition of Eater.com.
NYC Eater. Did you see this, either of you?
No.
Entitled,
excited.
Do Not Order Burgers at Restaurants.
Whoa.
This take was maybe a little too hot.
I don't think it was too hot.
Okay, let's read.
I said whoa, coming from the guy who does not order a burger at a restaurant.
That's how hot it was.
Let's read some excerpts. Make no mistake, we love burgers. The problem is the culture behind them. Nearly 15 years since Daniel Boulud received ample publicity for gourmandizing. I don't know the burger, stuffing it with foie gras and short ribs in a style that evoked.
We're not having any foie gras burgers.
Terrines of his native Lyon.
That's not a burger.
Chefs are still largely focusing their efforts on transforming the lowly burger into something of gustatory excess and charging a lot for it.
I don't like the term lowly burger, but okay.
I don't like the term gustatory. Here's some advice.
This is NYC Eater. Look.
Don't order the burger at restaurants. Not at Emily, where the pretzel burger is obnoxiously listed as, quote, limited availability.
That is
obnoxious. Not at the Grill, where an everything bagel-style burger with fries costs $41.
No.
Insane.
Nope.
Here's why
everything bagel burger, though, It was kind of appealing to me.
You would eat that? Not at $41.
You know what's appealing to me? An everything bagel. Like, and then yes. Maybe a...
An everything bagel and a burger.
Which cost $10, maybe?
You know what's appealing to me? Getting two tavern burgers and still having $30 left over. Here's why you shouldn't order a fancy burger at restaurants. Number one, they're too big and they're too rich.
But wait. I want to pause before this, right? Before we get in, because there's a lot of reasons, right?
The meat of the rationale here?
Yes, the meat of the rationale. The undercooked meat of the rationale. But... Before we get into the details, right, I want to say that I actually think some people think that the story was antithetical to what we're doing. But actually, I think that this NYC Eater article agrees with us, because what we have done is we've thrown out restaurant burgers, right?
We have. That is accurate.
Because you don't order burgers at restaurants.
I don't know if that's necessarily the reason we did it. It just seemed like it wasn't quite in the spirit of this.
We want people who are masters of their craft, right? Not people who have a
burger. Masters of their domain?
Not people who have a burger on the menu, but people who are just focused on burgers.
Perhaps a burger master, which I would give like a 72.
And we did not review.
We did not get around to that.
Okay, so run through the reasons.
All right. The number one reason was they're too big and too rich.
Arguments against the gourmet style, a cloth napkin burger.
Yes. Exactly. Cloth napkin burger.
They're not charred enough, which, having eaten Loretta's, I agree, you want a good char.
Sometimes you don't need a char. Look, I'm open to both types of burgers.
I agree. They're overloaded, too much stuff on them, toppings that end up detracting from the meat.
And basically, what they're saying is, they're trying to put fancy toppings onto these burgers to justify the $41 cost of the burger.
Oh, that gets to you. They're too expensive.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah. They're boring.
This is getting into... They're boring. This is clickbait. This I don't know. I don't know if I agree.
They don't show a chef's vision, which
Not sure. I really am not concerned with the chef's vision at Loretta's, but
then no. Look, I am concerned. The chef's vision was the tavern burger.
The chef's vision is they don't want that many people in there. They don't want that many people.
Burgers on occasion don't even come with fries.
Now, see, Eli touched on that also.
He did. That is correct. So, I mean, that's the thing, is a lot of these complaints echo things we've said over the course of this pod.
I think mostly burgers that come with fries are restaurant burgers.
Yes.
It is probably
unless you're at local burger chain Red Robin.
Shout out to local burger
bottomless fries, which I think Red Robin has gone downhill.
Oh, really? We'll have to put you in touch with Eli to have you guys duke it out on Red Robin. I mean, here's the thing. We've gone over repeatedly on this podcast why I don't like gourmet burgers.
Yes. A little bit too much, honestly.
We've gone over why I think that the 8-ounce burger bar burger.
Are you really? You've leaned into hating 8-ounce burger bar. You pretty much just tweeted this story and then added the @8-ounce burger bar. You did the eyes to the side with 8-ounce burger bar.
I did. That's accurate. But here's the other thing. If you like gourmet burgers, just eat them. Well, you don't need me to tell you whether you should or should not order burgers in restaurants. Do what you like. That's the one thing I don't get about burger culture, is this need for like everyone to have the same opinion. Like this.
Yeah, I mean, people trying to find the best burger in Seattle. Like, come on. I mean, there's so many different best burgers in Seattle.
Look, obviously, it's implied that it's our opinion. But we're not saying if you disagree with us, your opinion is wrong.
Oh, I have said that actually a lot of times.
Actually, you said that to me earlier about that by Loretta's script. Like, different people have different tastes. It's a very subjective thing, burgers. So, you know, order what you like. But I 100% agree with the conclusion, and I do not generally order burgers in restaurants. So I'm torn on whether I actually agree with this or not, I guess. I agree with the premise, but not the spirit, but not necessarily the conclusion. So
I feel like I need a job where I can write an article that says don't buy food that should be cheap when it's not.
Yeah, but you're going to need to use a lot more of the phrase gustatory.
Gourmetizing.
Gourmetizing. I don't think that's a real word.
What does gustatory mean? Like gusto?
I think it's got something to do with the palate. Concerned with tasting or the sense of taste.
Oh, it's an NYC eater word.
It's not a Felton Guest word. No. Decidedly. Do we have anything else to add on this?
I'm so excited to eat all these burgers.
You've already eaten all of them. You're so excited to eat them again.
I'm even more saying. Excited.
Because these are the best of the best of Seattle's burgers.
Yes.
On that note, let's talk music.
Yeah, let's talk music. So we brought you on here today, Reese. You're in town. Your band Bully has just signed to Sub Pop Records. It was announced within the last couple weeks. You're from Seattle. And I thought we would start out first off talking about kind of what that means for you being a former Seattleite, living in Nashville now, and signing to a local record label.
Can we start with a toast to them?
Oh, of course we can. Absolutely. A toast to you. Bully.
No, to Sub Pop Records.
To Sub Pop Records.
In Seattle, yes.
Yeah, a key part of Seattle's music history.
Yes.
And music future.
We're all really excited. I'm really excited. It's crazy. You know this, but I interned there like for 3 months, 6 years ago or something. Literally never thought I'm getting this internship because one day I'm going to be signed.
Do you think it helped a little bit?
Not at all. No.
Are they aware of it?
No, they were not aware of it, which I was happy about.
That's good.
Yeah. The lovely lady I interned for does not work there anymore right now. But it was still cool to be back in the office.
Who was that?
Sasha.
Oh, Sasha. I was going to say shouts to Angelina, but no.
In case you were wondering, that's not how you get signed to records. You don't get a college radio internship.
Aspiring musicians out there, do not go intern for Sub Pop.
That was a really fun summer. It was the last time I lived in Seattle.
Oh, 2011. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been friends for a very long time, right? We've been friends. We're celebrating. Are we toasting? We should toast again to this.
Yeah.
We're celebrating our 10-year anniversary as friends. We've got like 3 ounces of beer because there's a lot of us drinking it.
It's four, technically speaking.
I said there's three of us drinking it?
No.
4 ounces.
You said there's 3 ounces. It's actually more than that. It's 22.
We're on beer number 2.
I was exaggerating for effect.
All right.
Anyway, okay, so we've been friends for a long time. And the place that we really became friends, we were talking about this, was Capitol Hill Block Party, which we were talking about earlier. And I thought this might be a good time. I want to come back to the Bully stuff and the Seattle stuff or whatever. But I want to reminisce here a little bit. And I was thinking about, we became friends in 2007 at Capitol Block Party, but 2008 really felt like the year that we took it up a notch.
I agree. We definitely took it up a few notches.
Kevin's microphone away. Like now it's officially not it's not a Pelton cast anymore.
It was probably multiple notches.
Yeah.
It was, I feel like there's so many stories where it's like, we're at Capitol Block Party. I booked one of the stages and we drank more than I can possibly imagine. So is this 2008, right? Where we get the stage set up on Friday morning. This is like, I don't know, 10 or 11 o'clock.
I had nothing to do with it this year, but because I had helped the year previously, I think I showed up around noon.
You're just hanging out.
Just to hang out, yeah.
I went up to the production person at Block Party. I was like, where's their liquor store?
Pre-grocery store liquor.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. In we Washington walked up to like State. 12th and something. There was a liquor
store. It was
like
12th and Piker Pine.
Yeah.
By the police station.
And there's a liquor store there. I'm like, where can we find a liquor store? He pointed us directly to it. So you could get a sense of what the culture is like around Capitol Block Party and drinking. He did not hesitate at all. And we were very into the band The Hold Steady at the time, right? They were by far our favorite band. And
this is summer 2008, Positive Jam.
Stay Positive.
Stay Positive. It just
they just
out.
Put out the record Stay Positive, which we were obsessed with. And they also have a song where there's the lyric, in the park drinking dark Bacardi, thinking things are funny when they really ain't that funny. So we get a fifth of dark Bacardi.
We'd already done this in a park, but this time we did not have a park.
This was not the first time that we'd done this. We did this in a park in West Seattle, right?
Yeah. Lincoln Park.
In Lincoln Park in West Seattle on the way to the Vashon Ferry.
Yeah. But this time we did it in your car parked on
Broadway.
On Broadway, I think.
It was when I showed up in the early afternoon. You guys probably had maybe 3 inches left in the Bacardi.
We finished that.
We drank most of the Bacardi by the time you arrived.
With the
vanilla
steady,
Coke. It was a bottle of vanilla Coke. Seriously.
Oh my God.
It's incredible how well I remember this massively blackout day of my life. Like, I shouldn't remember it.
Okay, so then after that, you come into the car, and we finished the fifth of Bacardi, right?
And I didn't really know anything.
You were maybe working before this?
I was at work. And then you guys were trying to finish the Bacardi, and the car was running.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because it was hot.
Mm-hmm. You need that AC.
We needed the AC, yeah.
Get out of the car. Oh, locked. He's in. Car is running.
Do you remember? You didn't even know about this. This is before you ever even went to block party, Kevin.
So Tristan is like, I'm going to like call my mom. She has AAA.
I'll always call my mom.
They can come.
Anytime there's an issue, the first thing, this is for both you and I.
I'm like, no, we can figure this out. I went to like an auto shop that was like down the street. And I got a coat hanger from the guy. And it's not the typical, like, get into a car with a coat hanger. The window was kind of cracked, and the car was on.
Which I think was crucial.
Yeah.
So just stretch the coat hanger out and hit the down button on the window.
And you did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very impressive.
You still own this car. Still.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No, this is a different car.
It looks really similar.
It's still a maroon car, okay. But a different car. All right. That was a Chevy Lumina. Now I have a Toyota Camry.
Okay.
That was the beginning of the day.
That was the beginning
of the day.
For
me, 2:30, 3 o'clock? Yeah. In the afternoon?
Later in the day, we're so excited about the Hold Steady, right?
Yeah.
Really, I blame the Hold Steady for all of this.
Yeah.
Right? We were very young and excited, and they're a drinking band, so we had to drink as much as possible, I guess as early as possible.
I would never do this again.
No, we were almost much older now. Yeah. But
10 years, in fact.
Later, we're hanging out in the like VIP area for people who'd worked on the festival, which unfortunately had free drinks. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for us, but unfortunately kind of for you, Reese.
Unfortunately. Yes, this year, I believe, was Jack Daniels and Miller High Life.
Yeah, there's only two options.
That was what it was. But, you know, the Hold Steady had another song referencing a Dillinger 4 line about double whiskey, Coke, no ice. Uh-huh. Thankfully, I think I had ice in it. I don't know if I could have done double whiskey, Coke, no ice.
But it was a very dangerous line for them to have.
Double whiskey, Coke, and a Miller High Life, like back and forth. I don't know how long that lasted, but I know sometime when the sun was still up, somebody found me in the single porta potty in the VIP area at a high point in my life, puking everything up with a massive line of everybody else in the VIP area.
There's only maybe two porta potties in there.
Use the bathroom. Yeah.
There's still only one. There was only one this weekend.
Oh my God. So then somehow you got out of there.
No, they kicked me out. They cut my wristband off, and they said, go home, you slob. And I was like, I'm not going home. The Hold Steady haven't played yet. So
we're not missing. Still, this comes back to the Hold Steady.
Yeah. I walked around the festival, and then I walked up to the Vera stage, and I walked in the back door, and I said hi to the security guard, and I walked straight up to the Hold Steady, and I walked into the photo pit. And then they started. It was a magical moment.
Right in front. I remember I was right behind that, like on the other side of the fence. And you were in front of me. I'm like, wait, how did you get here?
Shout out to Sage.
And I had a tie around my hand, like a boat tie for my bike lock keys. But I apparently was fist pumping so hard. Those flew off sometime. So then I had locked my bike to wherever and I couldn't get it out.
Wait, what happened with your bike?
It was locked. I had to go. I guess I had a spare at home. I don't know. I got it back somehow.
Chris had to get it.
Never seen the bike. I went down the street, actually, to a bike shop. And I was like, my friend, he left his bike running. But he lost the key. It's locked.
So that was 10 years ago.
Okay, sorry. We've been talking about this a lot this weekend. So ridiculous. Are there any other memories from Block Party that you guys have? You have actually played Capital Block Party, Reese. Mm-hmm. You've never played it with Bully, but with a previous band of yours.
That was 2012, right?
Yes.
That was Tropical Punk played Vera Stage in the afternoon. That was a great day.
That was a chill, like, VIP. Was I remember, it? Yeah. Like, their whole band was in there.
Yeah.
The one guy looks like Keanu Reeves.
We got pretty drunk.
You had the privilege of knowing the buyer for the stage.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed it so much that I bought a tropical punk tank top.
I have a tank top.
It's a great tank top.
I wore it playing basketball last week. I will wear it tomorrow. I'll wear a tropical punk tank top from 2012 with my Starburys.
We've got the new bully tank top, or the rest of the bully tank tops with us, so you can have...
Wait, do you have bully tanks?
Yeah, they...
Oh, man.
Oh, they're it's like the Scottie Pippen jersey.
Are you allowed to talk about these?
Yeah, it's like Scottie Pippen jersey.
Oh, really?
But it says bully instead of bulls.
Oh, wow.
You should have
Are we allowed to wear those in Seattle?
That's a good question.
It's an homage to Scottie Pippen being drafted by the Sonics.
Oh, yeah.
And almost being traded to the Sonics.
It's not truly a Bulls jersey, so you should be safe.
You're like, you're okay. You're fine. So you live in Nashville currently, right? Back in Seattle. Unfortunately, you missed Capital Block Party by a week. But I was curious to hear about, it feels like Nashville has become, it's a music town generally, but it feels like recently it became a sports town.
It did, yeah.
And I was curious,
and specifically a Preds town.
A lot of hockey enthusiasm this year.
I'm curious to hear what it was like for you being on the ground for Predators fever.
The only thing I have to compare it to is what it felt like when I was 7 years old and 1995 Mariners team happened.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you in Seattle for either? You were in Seattle for the first Super Bowl run.
Yes. But it didn't, the enthusiasm was not as heavy.
Yes.
Right? Like, my memory might be wrong about this.
No, I think you're right about that.
I was 16 and it wasn't. It didn't feel as important that they were the Seahawks were in the Super Bowl.
And you haven't been around in Seattle for this run, the Russell Wilson
era. I was living in Nashville during that time. So the only thing I have to compare it to is like 95 and 97.
95 Mariners.
But, I mean, I feel like that's a good comparison, though, because of the same way it kind of came out of nowhere.
It did, right? They came out of a wild card team, and the Preds came out of literally the 16th seed, the last seed in the playoffs, and made it to the Stanley Cup. And nobody expected them to get through. And even when they swept the Blackhawks in the first round, there was still this like level of skepticism, you know, like, whatever. I think it took finally getting to the Ducks and then everyone looking like, we can beat the Ducks. Like, we beat the Ducks, you know, three playoffs in a row now, or two playoffs in a row.
Really?
Like, we'll talk about the Stanley Cup. But it was that kind of wave, like, just the whole city was blowing up every Predators game.
It seemed like the music industry in particular.
It was incredibly fun. But anyone who lived there had to get behind it, you know?
Uh-huh. Were there people on corners selling T-shirts?
Yes.
That's how you know things are
Broadway,
going well.
I mean, Broadway was like completely yellow.
This is not the Broadway that Sir Mix-a-Lot posse's in. No.
Broadway's like
There's no dicks anywhere.
Broadway's the kind of fairly trashy, like honky-tonk, you know, like... tourist district, but it became just, it's where Bridgestone Arena is on Broadway.
Really?
And one of the reasons it's such a great sports town is the arena's right there and the Titan Stadium is across the river. So you can just, you pop out of the arena or the stadium and you can walk to one of 100 bars that are ready to be packed. There was supposedly somewhere around 200,000 people downtown for the combination Game 6 CMA Fest.
Oh man!
End of Bonnaroo.
Oh wow! Coinciding with Bonnaroo,
shit show that was June 10th or whatever.
Were you able to go to any of these Predators games?
Yes. How many? I went to one St. Louis series game, one Anaheim game, and two Stanley Cup games.
Wow.
I had a ticket to the Blackhawks game. Had to work. Frustrated about that one. That was the one they came back in overtime and won. Really exciting, like 4-hour game. The Seattle takeaway, you guys should be really excited about the possibility of having an NHL team.
Really?
I mean, we always hear about how much better it is in person.
It is so much fun. You can't describe it. It is so much fun. I have not had the pleasure of going to a Seahawks game
ever
in my life. Yeah.
Wow.
And I've been to a Titans game, and it was really boring.
I can say the Seahawks games are really boring. I don't consider them boring generally.
Who was playing quarterback for the Titans at this point?
It was this past year.
Mariota.
Okay. It was Titans versus Colts, and they should have won. And even though they had a chance to win that game, it was boring. The crowd did not seem to expect them to win. There
you've
came
never
a point,
seen anything until you've seen Fitzmagic live. That's what he's trying to say. Anyway.
Their game of point with the Predators where you just expected to win. They won really? Like 8 out of 10 games at home in the playoffs. No, more. 12 out of 14.
Were you at the final game?
Is that right? Yes, I was at the final game.
What was it like being there?
Honestly, that game felt the worst of all of them for a combination of reasons. I don't really want to get too deep into it.
It's a little bit traumatizing.
Yeah, the rest of the games were so much fun, and for a lot of reasons, this one was not. It wasn't even fun to be there and watch.
Really?
And not because we lost. Like, yeah. The loss was just another thing that happened.
Did people rally around the team? Like, I mean, I remember the last game of the 95 season.
There was a nice standing ovation. Everything happened like, you know, you should have.
But because right, it was Alex Rodriguez comforting Joey Cora, right, at the end of the 95 season.
That sounds right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is weird because Alex Rodriguez was like 17 years old then.
Joey Cora was 40.
Yeah. Every woman in Seattle loved both of them.
I don't know what else to say other than it's so much fun when you're in there. And it is, you can be as loud as possible. You're expected to be as loud as possible. And there's a roof on the thing. So it gets louder than the CenturyLink, I think.
So I have a hard time with some of the sports where you want to be super loud. Like football, it's like easy. You're on defense, you're loud.
You know like, when to be loud.
Yeah. Hockey, soccer, basketball, the ball is going back and forth. Like does it matter?
You can be as loud as you want all the time.
I mean, there's kind of a thing where like it's not like a real clear line between offense and defense a lot of the time.
No, you know? But when the puck's like in your offensive zone aisle, right? I remember a couple series when they're controlling it in the zone for at least a minute, and everyone just starts to get antsy, and they're like, you know, take a shot. You're controlling it. That's your best chance at, you know, scoring a goal. And the crowd just kind of, it just builds from that point. And same thing on defense when you're just trying to get them to get it out of there. Like when the puck stays in the same zone for too long, the crowd gets kind of antsy.
You get kind of antsy. Really, well, Nashville's star player is a defender, right?
Their star line. I mean, most people talk about the defensive line.
Yeah.
But we picked up Nick Bonino from the Penguins in the offseason. He's an attacker. It was great. Resigned Victor Arvidsson for another 7 years or something. He was one of our best attackers. Johansson will be back.
This is by far the most hockey analysis I've ever had on this like podcast.
It. Okay, all the
hockey offseason transact. I like you're like so much so animated about hockey. I love it.
there's the announcer for NBC Sports. I don't know.
Doc Emmerich?
No, he. God, I don't forget his name right now. His name's Mike something. He just had this weird beef against PK Subban, who's one of the star defender that they traded. Yeah. This big like blockbuster hockey trade happened in the offseason, and defender for defender, and Subban really stood up. He happens to be a black player, and this dude has it out for him. He was like calling him a clown for dancing, and like
this is the guy who like when he got attacked in I think in Pittsburgh, he was like he deserves it.
Yeah.
Mike
when
Milbury?
He's in his head. What?
Mike Milbury?
Yeah, Mike Milbury. Piece of garbage. So that dude comes to Nashville for game 6, and somebody is just, you can hear somebody at the end of the game just screaming at him, like, get the f*** out of Nashville! Like, he's not well-liked. Like, when he was a player, he threw a shoe at a fan. I don't know the story.
Throws
very
a
well,
shoe.
But he like came off the ice and like started trying to hit this guy with a shoe. I'm probably getting this story wrong, but
I believe that's true. Wikipedia. No.
There was a lot of rallying around the team and support for the team because Nashville is not a quote unquote hockey town.
Oh, he slapped the fan with his shoe.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm not losing my shoe. Yeah.
So there was a lot of, you know, traditional or you know the new breed against the tradition in the Pittsburgh versus Nashville situation.
Well, I hope that this rivalry continues.
I hope it. I hope Seattle gets a team. Yeah, I did say I think to you, Tristan, maybe that I didn't feel at any remorse for rooting for Nashville because I never had a hockey team.
That's the best thing.
I'm sorry, Thunderbirds, and congratulations on the championship.
But, yeah.
I will never root for a Seattle hockey team.
Red Deer was just too strong.
No, Red Deer didn't face Red Deer.
A medicine hat just can't be beat.
No, we beat all the WHL teams.
Kamloops. Kamloops is too good.
That was the Ontario junior, major junior hockey. Minor, junior, I don't know.
Anyway, I like am buying season tickets next year.
Really?
That is how, yeah, that is how.
Wow. Me, I feel like a lot of people
friend and
must
I are
think
going on season tickets. And,
that is awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. I don't know how much I'll actually get to be there because of the touring and stuff.
Because the band that even though we forgot about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that minor triviality.
Well, do you want to stick around and talk sports with us? You've been a Seattle sports fan. You have nowhere to go. I'm giving you a ride.
I'm at least going to sit here and listen.
Yeah. Wait, should we transition directly into the arena after the hockey talk, or do you want to talk ballers on HBO? Well,
let's talk.
So you haven't seen the whole first episode of this season of ballers on HBO.
I have to confess, I'm about 22 minutes in.
Yeah, there's a major twist that's coming in those last 8 minutes.
You watched it?
Yeah, of course.
Don't spoil it for
I haven't got to watch any of it. And
I watched it as soon as it aired. Like,
did you?
Come on. It's ballers.
Well, you're not watching Game of Thrones. That's the thing, is your Sunday is open.
That is
we're committed to an hour on Sundays.
So last year, what was last season of the
brilliant second season of Ballers on HBO?
Have we decided what the third season is going to be?
You know what? It'll decide for itself what it's going to be.
Because I was thinking maybe it might be the critically acclaimed third season.
Oh, yes. I almost high-fived you, especially if we're the critics.
We are, yeah. All right. We'll get back to that next
critically
week.
Acclaimed third season of Ballers on HBO.
We'll get back to that next week. Plenty more of The Rock and
Spencer. I call him Spencer.
Remember,
but wait,
remember
so you've watched
name.
The whole episode. I want to talk about this for a second. It feels like it's veering into, first off, immediately there's fertility talk.
That is true.
It's like, boom! First off, right away.
Well, look, when the
you're shocked.
Yeah.
The whole episode is mostly about fertility. I'm not even joking.
Very intense scientific discussions of it.
It starts out with a pickup basketball game, reintroducing every single character on Ballers.
Yeah, that was a nice touch.
Except for Rob Corddry. Rob Corddry didn't get invited to the basketball game.
He did not.
And whatever their boss's name is, who I call Hector Elizondo, but I don't think
Mr. Anderson.
Is his name, is he Hector Elizondo?
No, that's not his actual name. It's
not
Richard
not,
Schiff.
Richard Schiff.
Well, does Vince get the movie or not?
We'll see. I feel like they've definitely veered a little bit more into Entourage territory, though.
The other thing, I feel like there's a theme of... Was last season
fertility
going international?
Is the theme.
I don't know.
No, this year they're going international.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the twist?
No.
You spoiled
that
it.
That is not the twist. But we missed out an opportunity to reference that last week when we were talking about Beer Camp going international. Uh-huh. It's very much like Ballers season
three. It's like, but they're going to Vegas this year just like Entourage.
That
there's
going
to be a feud with Seth Green. I guarantee it. Seth Green will guest star in at least 2 episodes.
You know what? I'm in on that.
Okay, yeah,
I'm
me too.
All right.
It is so hot in here.
Again, we'll get back to Ballers. Now let's talk a little bit about the Sonics arena situation. And I think the most interesting thing to come up in this week was CJ McCollum, of all people, asking NBA Commissioner Adam Silver about the future of expansion as part of an interview he conducted for the Players Tribune this week. And here's what Adam Silver had to say. I think it's just a question of when the right time is to think about expansion. And then later he said, I don't want to put a precise timeline on it, but it's inevitable at some point we'll start looking at growth of franchises. That's always been the case in this league. Seattle will no doubt be on the short list of cities. And people are getting way too excited about these.
I mean, he did say the short list of cities.
I mean, look.
And what he's mean by start looking at it, like they don't look at it ever?
You know, the other thing that came up this week was Steve Ballmer was on with the Woj pod with Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN, and he commented that at no point since he's owned the Clippers has expansion even been discussed among the owners. He also related a past conversation with Adam Silver where, you know, he basically went to Silver after he retired as CEO of Microsoft and was like, okay, I want to own a team in Seattle. You know, how can I do this? And Silver was like, yeah, there's not really a good way to do that. Like, there's not necessarily a good opportunity, and encouraged him to look at teams that were not up for being moved, which eventually led Ballmer, of course, to buy the Clippers for $2 billion. So I don't think that this Silver comment is really that different in tone from what he said at the NBA Finals. Something similar to this effect about, look, eventually we know expansion is going to happen, but it's not a consideration in the short term. And I think that's the best way to think about it.
Wasn't at first, maybe a few years ago, they were saying, oh, when they do the new TV deal,
Yeah.
They would look at it.
Yeah, and I don't know if that necessarily ever came directly from the commissioner. I think that was more of an outside analysis of it. The weird thing is recently I've heard not until the next CBA or TV deal, which are not for many, many years because they're in the second year of the TV deal and the first year of their new CBA. So it's a weird time to be pushing them back to, you know, the next cycle of this. But that's just kind of, I think, along the same lines of an indication of, look, if you're holding out hope for expansion, you know, don't expect it imminently. It will surely happen at some point, but not in the short term.
And is an expansion the best option for us as Sonics fans?
There's no obvious team that is in danger of moving right now. Things can escalate quickly in the NBA. I mean, obviously, we saw that with the Sonics where, you know, you look at it, it was a matter of 3 years between Howard Schultz kind of raising the idea of they wanted a renovation of Key Arena and trying to address that with politicians in the state government, and between that and the team moving to Oklahoma City. So things can move quickly, but there's no team that you look at right now and say, oh yeah, that team is likely to move or in imminent danger of moving.
But in order for us to be guilt-free and non-hypocrites...
I mean, look, without question, you don't want to put anyone else through what we went through in terms of a franchise move. So obviously the hope is for expansion. But, you know, it's going to kind of require all teams to be on steady ground within their cities for the NBA not to feel like that leverage of having the option of moving to Seattle is useful for owners in their home market.
And are there international cities that would... maybe come in above Seattle?
Not above Seattle, I wouldn't say. I mean, you know, there's
don't ask The Rock.
Again, stay tuned.
Plenty of fertile international cities when it comes to the National Basketball Association.
This is a fertile topic for discussion. No, it was interesting. There was a lot of baseball talk with Mexico City last week that their commissioner, whose name I cannot remember off the top of my head, kind of fanned those flames at the All-Star game.
I went through this the other day, and I looked it up, and I don't remember his name.
It's not Bud Selig.
The guy is not Bud Selig.
Who was like our whole life.
The successor to Bud Selig. Yeah.
That guy.
It's probably a good thing we don't
Bud
know his name.
Bud Selig, who also stole a Seattle franchise.
That is true. Many years ago. Rob Manfred is the name of the MLB commissioner. So he talked about Mexico City as well as Montreal, which he has pushed readily. In the NBA, I mean, I think Vancouver would be a potential consideration, and they have played some games in Mexico City, but I don't think either of those markets would be ahead of Seattle. Seattle would certainly be at the top of the list, is assuming that we get the arena, you know, one of these two plans figured out and approved within the next year here.
Shout out to CJ McCollum for asking the question, though.
Yeah, he said that people ask him about it all the time, being in the Northwest.
He's kind of annoyed.
Yeah, he was like, come on.
Aside from his top five restaurants in Portland, this is the thing that he's asked the most.
I don't know how he feels about Screen Door or Pock Pock. So that was the main thing as far as the arena situation. I think that means it's time for your favorite segment. Don't burn yourself. We got Mariner's hot takes coming at you.
I was wondering if maybe as a guest you might have some interesting hot takes here. But
my hot take is the exact opposite of Eli's. Here comes another 81-81 season. I mean, that's only a hot take. It's only a hot take because
you disagree with Eli.
Yeah, that's why it's a hot take. I don't think that's otherwise a hot take.
Like things felt very different 1 week ago. So shout out to the Mariners though for going all in on the season and then losing 3 of 4 to the team that's right above them in the wild card.
Bottom of 11th right now.
I just went to check.
It's kind of amazing. We're closely watching because every game counts for the Mariners right now because they're bad. But so first they go out and trade for David Phelps, right? They traded Brian Hernandez, who I'm assuming that's how his name is pronounced. It's spelled very strangely, but like a top 10 prospect in the organization. We all rationalized it. We said, this is an okay reliever, maybe a spot starter. We can handle this. It might be a little bit much to give up. We're okay with it. But then they come back later in the week, Jerry DePoto doubling up, and he trades for Marco Gonzalez, a finesse lefty who hasn't played significantly in the majors since 2014. He looks like a 4 or 5 starter, will never be a commanding starter for the team. And they trade the number 2 prospect in the organization, an already weak farm system.
Whoa.
Someone who can hit for power, speed, he has speed, and who Fangraphs called one of baseball's most promising young sluggers. who they project to be worth 5 more wins over his career than Marco Gonzalez, who they basically project to be maybe a long reliever, might sometimes make a spot start. Are you ready? Are you ready? Well, you're trying to interject, but listen, are you ready to add a couple more names to this list?
Okay.
Adam Jones.
Oh.
David Arias. Jason Veritek, Carlos Guillen, Tino Martinez, Shin-Soo Choo, and now...
I don't know if I'm counting Tino on the list. He was traded for financial reasons well into his major league career.
Still, it's a very bad trade for the Mariners. And now...
He added one crazy year.
Add Tyler O'Neill and Brian Hernandez to that list. You're right here calling it. The Mariners have wagered their future for picking up a long reliever.
It is a very low play.
What is the logic here?
How much of this do you think had to
What would you grade this if you were trade grading it? I really want... Are there baseball trade grades? Because I wanted to see that F, and I wanted to retweet that post.
I don't know if there are. I mean, I read Dave Cameron on this. I don't think he actually does grades. I think he just does analysis.
He had some middling fire tanks.
He did. You're right. They were not...
It's like you control a 25-year-old for a long time who's not good. That's great.
They were warm tanks. How much do you feel like the success of the Mariners outfield this season played into the decision to trade O'Neill? Like feeling like you don't need
like they have some
much.
Random starters that are not going to be long-term solutions.
Oh, how
they
dare
traded
you talk about
two outfielders also.
That is accurate.
I mean, they're looking at Guillermo Heredia as the long-term starter in the outfield. So right now, the Mariners sit 2.5 games out.
Depending on whether this game ends while we play.
Literally right this second. They have 3 teams to climb ahead of, and they are in a worse position this week than they were last week, and they have traded away 2 prospects.
Yeah, that all seems accurate. I don't know. There's a strong defense of what they've done here. By the way,
no Martinez.
Actually, they are currently 3 games out because of the fact that Kansas City won tonight. So they have
to
win to keep pace. Yeah, to stay 2.5 games back. So they're currently in the bottom of the 11th right now against the Boston Red Sox. We will monitor this game as the podcast continues and see whether it ends. It ends before this podcast, which has already gone on long enough. Anything else on the Mariners?
Oh, God.
In happier news...
I just want to...
Doug Fisk. I went to the first game Doug Fisk on the Red Sox. Yeah.
I went to the first game he started for the Mariners. We lost 1-0 to the Yankees.
The Red Sox have currently used 6 pitchers. The Mariners have currently used 7 pitchers so far tonight. So working deep into these bullpens.
I feel like this year is like they're trying. We have to get to the playoffs. It's been 16 years. We need to get there. There's actually people that don't pay attention to the Mariners, which that used to be myself. Like me and Tristan discussed again. You make a conscious decision to pay attention to the Mariners.
Effort. You have to try.
There was a guy at Loretta's this evening that was like, oh, well, yeah, what, the Mariners? Oh, man. And then, man, that wasn't good against the Yankers.
Which it was actually a reference to the show Crank Yankers, as it turns out.
Shout out Jim Florentine.
So, there are children now who are old enough to drive who have never seen the Mariners make the playoffs. Is that right? No, I guess that's not quite right. We're getting close. Because it was in 2001. So they'd still only be 15 and a half now. But close to 16.
It's almost like how Spencer Strassmore has to pay Ricky Jarrett back that $5 million this year. Almost.
In happier news.
Much happier news.
Seattle Sounders with a pair of wins.
Sounders. Yeah,
there
we
go. Another cheer. This is the best part of having a 4-man pod.
Yeah, way better cheers. As they return from the CONCACAF Gold Cup break last week to win twice at home, coming back from a 3-0 deficit to beat DC United 4-3 on Wednesday, and then carrying over that momentum with a 3-0 win over the San Jose
and even the game before that, they scored 3 goals. So the last 3 games, it's been 10-1, a 9-goal differential.
Well, no, they give up 3 goals. They give up 3 goals.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah,
but what's fascinating is that they did this all last week with Nicolò Lodero in the game on Wednesday. He was then red carded in the 89th minute of that game and missed Sunday's game due to suspension. No Dempsey. No Jordan Morris. Dempsey, of course, busy scoring the go-ahead goal in the Gold Cup?
Yeah, the second goal on a free kick.
He finished it off.
He scored the clincher.
Yeah, in the Gold Cup. Jordan Morris starting that game as well. So the Sounders, without their three best attacking talents, and still put three goals on the board on Sunday, which was an amazing performance. Christian Roldan with a brace in that game. And then the other thing that stood out is how much the attack was livened up by the new outside backs. Nuhu at left back, who has been playing more and more, is a young player who was part of S2 last season and has broken into the first team this year. And then Kelvin Leerdam, their targeted allocation money addition so far during the transfer window. And then also pushing up Jovan Jones to play in midfield to create some more attacking punch with all those guys missing. Jovan Jones with his 9th assist of the season on Sunday, which now is the most by an MLS defender since 2003. And
only the top, I think the top assists is 10, but there's a long list.
Yeah.
A few people have 10 and then 9. In the last maybe 6 Sounders games, a lot of people have been saying, why don't they move Jovan Jones into the midfield?
I mean, I think Nuhu's emergence gives them the option of doing that. But all of a sudden, Brian Schmetzer has some really difficult decisions to make about who to play when Dempsey and Morris come back into the lineup after the Gold Cup final on Wednesday against Jamaica. Because you've got all these guys playing well. We haven't mentioned Will Bruin, who is the team's leading scorer, came up with the crucial first goal on Wednesday against DC United.
I think him and Dempsey each have 7
goals. They're tied with 7 goals. And all of a sudden, the Sounders, with these 2 wins, tied for 4th in the West with 30 points, 4th in points per game at 1.43, and seeming like incredibly deep after a few weeks ago. Is like, out where can they possibly get offense with Jordan Morris slumping?
It's huge, especially so the game Sunday evening, Stefan Fry and Will Bruin were the only players on the field that hadn't started in a defensive position.
Yeah.
For the Sounders this year. So the defensive depth is crazy. They add Leerdam in the defense. You move Jovan Jones to the midfield.
Also moved Brad Evans up to the midfield, which helped with the depth there. I know how you feel about Brad Evans.
And then you have Dempsey and Morris coming back. You're going to have a lot of options.
And potentially, latest word out of Paraguay,
yeah,
including from radio station ABC Cardinal, that the Sounders will sign 23-year-old...
I listened to that one a lot, by the way.
That's good.
I listened to that earlier today.
Very, very entertaining. 23-year-old midfielder Durlis Gonzalez from Dynamo Kiev. We talked about him a few weeks ago when it looked like the Sounders were close to completing a transfer for him. The reports as of last week were that they had pulled out of those talks because of the fact that Dynamo Kiev was demanding too much. But now it appears the Sounders are going to make him a designated player addition here during the transfer window. And you're going to have even more options in the attacking third of the field. You know, he is probably most effective playing left wing, a position where Jovan Jones might slot into, but, you know, could really play anywhere in the attack. So
yeah, and I thought it was really important for the Sounders, especially the last couple games, that Bruce Arena didn't call back Roldan, so yeah, he could come back.
And
while they took Dempsey away,
you know, he talked about the confidence of playing for the U.S. national team in the Gold Cup and the group stage of that, how much it translated to them coming back and scoring 3 goals in 2 games, playing a more attacking role there. So
can we talk about that little shimmy that Roldan did on the second goal? I think this is the second goal. A little bit of a fake inside, just the slightest feint. Such a professional play by Christian Roldan.
He's really becoming like a true box-to-box midfielder for the Sounders, which is amazing for a homegrown player, basically.
No, he's everywhere, and the touch is not what you normally see from a young, like, defensive MLS midfielder.
Yeah. So the Sounders.
So what do the Sounders have this weekend?
Yeah, a chance to continue this momentum, traveling to LA to face the Galaxy, who they beat in LA earlier this season. And it's been a rough season for the Galaxy, with some losses in terms of personnel. Robbie Keane, most notably. They are 9th in the West on 22 points, 5 points out of a playoff spot, and have lost their last 5 matches in a row. Remarkably, they are 1-6-3 at home this season at the StubHub Center. That's like a misprint. I don't see how that's possibly the case.
Maybe it was the news of the Chargers coming in.
Yeah. They've stolen their mojo.
If you have your own room for a long time, then you're like...
Oh, you got to share it with your brother.
Your little brother has to come in. And a new coach, obviously.
Yep. Yeah, losing Arena to the national team. So also exciting news in the Seattle sporting scene last weekend. It was the Storm hosting the WNBA All-Star Game Saturday.
I heard it was a pretty high-scoring affair.
It was. The West with 130 points in the 131-121 win, tying the All-Star record they set a few years ago. A showcase for Storm star Sue Bird, certainly in her record-tying 10th All-Star game. She tied set a WNBA All-Star record with her 11 assists and, you know, basically was just host of the weekend, threw a party for players on Friday night, the night before the game. And then, of course, stole headlines before the game was played, revealing in publicly for the first time in an ESPN article, by a great article by Michelle Vopel, that she is gay and dating Seattle Reign star and US WNT star Megan Rapinoe.
Seattle power couple.
Seriously. How about the Saturday the two of them had? Sue Bird plays in the All-Star game. Later that night, Megan Rapinoe scores a hat trick as the Seattle Reign beat Sky Blue FC 5-4. She's now up to a league high 12 goals, leading the NWSL. Is the Seattle Reign playing well of late?
Very nice.
Storm came back from the All-Star break in less exciting fashion, losing in LA Tuesday night to fall 3 games below .500 on the season. And they're back home to face the Dallas Wings on Friday. But after that...
Wait, what?
Yeah, there's a team in Dallas now.
What's the name of the Dallas?
The Wings.
They're named Dallas after the Wings?
They're named after the Macklemore song.
No, they're not.
Not really. Wouldn't it be great if they were, though?
I don't know if it would be.
You booked him at Block Party. After that, it will be a 5-game road trip for the Storm, so they really need to get a win before this tough road trip if they're going to stay in the playoff race.
Is the road environment for the WNBA, is it tough, or...
I mean, obviously you don't have necessarily the same size of fans, but also the travel can be difficult there because you're traveling commercially. So the Storm has tended to play much better historically at home. And it was a great crowd on Saturday for the All-Star game, announced at more than 15,000, had all sorts of Seattle basketball legends in attendance.
Was it sold out?
Wasn't quite a sellout. There were some open seats in the upper bowl, but you know, the biggest crowd you've had in there for a WNBA game since the 2004 WNBA Finals when they won their first championship. And all sorts of Seattle basketball royalty in the house. Bill Russell, Lenny Wilkins, Fred Brown, and Gus Williams from the 79 championship team were there. Dwayne Casey, the coach of the Toronto Raptors, who still lives in Seattle in the offseason after he was an assistant coach for a long time for the Sonics.
Wait, what was it that you said about Dwayne Casey and his daughter?
Well, so I was sitting directly behind Dwayne Casey as well as Lenny Wilkins. And so Isaiah Thomas was there with his kids. And he took off a little bit early in the fourth quarter and walks by. And Dwayne Casey gets his attention to say hello. And it felt like his daughter was very excited that Isaiah Thomas said hello to Dwayne Casey.
That Isaiah Thomas knew who her dad was, even though he's a current NBA head coach.
I mean, I don't want to...
He's coached against Isaiah Thomas.
I don't want to read too much into this interaction. I'm just trying to see it real far, but that was what I took from it.
Isaiah Thomas tweeted that he was at the Mariners game today, which is still going on.
Still going on.
He may have tweeted that he's not at the Mariners game anymore.
I got to imagine he left this one early, too. Still in the middle of the 12th now. Also, Richard Sherman. And then KJ Wright from the Seahawks. So
nice.
Awesome to see so much support for the WNBA All-Star Game from the basketball community and the Seattle pro sports community.
Was Kelsey Plum on the All-Star Game?
No, she did not.
Far from it.
No. Still near the bottom of the league in wins above replacement players so far this season in the WNBA. All right, in terms of Husky sports, a couple of commits this week for Husky football. Yeah, they picked up two recruits from the state of Texas, inside linebacker Nicholas Bolton from Frisco, Texas, and guard Vic Kern from Houston, Texas. Both those guys considered 3-star recruits.
And you know, we've talked about these to me are my favorite positions to sign when it comes to college football, signing linebackers and offensive linemen, especially interior offensive linemen. You just don't see that many of them, right? And I still don't believe, like, they signed them pretty early in the process. These guys both had scholarship offers from some pretty solid schools throughout the Pac-12. And I think that these, despite the fact that they're only, 3-star commitments, I think these are still huge commitments, almost more important than some of the quarterbacks that they've brought in.
I mean, you say early in the process, but the Huskies are up to 11 players now in their 2018 recruiting class, and you know, only a few months away now from the early signing period. So
the Victor Kern signing got a woof with like 3 exclamation points from Coach B.
Oh, that's a lot of excitement. What I would say though is, to quote Yogi Berra, in terms of recruiting, college football recruiting, it gets early late.
You gotta love some 3 stars from Texas, though.
Yeah,
some of the 3 stars from Texas seems like, you know, that's like a 4 star from Connecticut.
Yes, 4 stars from those states.
The Texas recruiting pipeline is a fascinating thing. I don't think the Huskies have established that in the past at any point. They will start their fall camp on July 31st, they announced today, and that will be a couple days or a day after the Seattle Seahawks start their training
so
camp
this is on
July
Sunday,
30th,
or
which is this Sunday. 31st Monday. Is next Monday.
Okay, and so the Seahawks start on Sunday.
That is correct.
Okay, so some people were asking frequently, Bob Condotta, why the Seahawks were starting training
so
camp.
So many times.
As if the Seahawks were like, you know what, fuck it, let's just not even practice this year. Like, we're good.
As if they've, I mean, look,
well, they don't want to get in trouble for practicing too much. It's against the rules to practice a lot.
The problem is not practicing too little. The depressing thought I had when I kept saying that is like, we're now in for like 6 months of the most annoying replies to Bob Condotta. It's going to be a long season.
Okay, so the reason they're starting camp so late is because they're playing their first preseason game, I think, on August 13th.
On a Sunday, which is unusual. Usually you probably play, you know, I think the rest of their games generally are Thursday.
And you get 15 days to practice before. Is that at home?
The first game is not at home.
We need to talk preseason plans.
That is accurate.
It's coming up.
They are on the road.
Awesome. Yes. Oh, wow.
The home of the LA Galaxy.
That is true.
They play the entire old AFC West, right?
No, because they host the Vikings.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not even close to attack.
It's close.
It's 3 out of 4. It's 3 out of 4. It is close. All right. No broadcast.
Not even close. Should we discuss how long has this gone?
We're at about an hour in now.
4.5 hours? Okay. I want to discuss maybe some of the storylines that we're going to be paying attention to, right? Because training camp will start before we have another Pelton cast. And this is the official beginning of Seahawks season.
Yeah, it is. It's been a long off season.
Is this baseball game still happening? I love long baseball games. It's like my favorite thing.
The great thing is we're going to be able to record this entire podcast and still go back and watch the end of this game, it looks like, now that it's heading to the 13th inning.
Okay, so what are some of the stories that you're going to be paying the most attention to going into this training camp? Because I had a couple.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of position battles this year that seem like they're going to be very interesting. I'm excited to see what happens at cornerback with the open spot opposite Richard Sherman. I think we're all kind of hoping that Shaquille Griffin will step up and claim that spot and move Jeremy Lain into the slot.
I mean, what it most likely seems like it'll be is Jeremy Lain will be the starter in quotes, but most often they'll play nickel and Jeremy Lain will be playing inside either way.
Right, which is why the weak side linebacker spot, which is technically up for grabs, that is not on this list.
No.
No one cares. That's barely going to play. It's not a base position anymore.
And cornerback and offensive line are the most obvious ones, right?
Yeah.
Are the positions where it seems like, you know, there are clear battles happening.
I gotta say, so far I feel like my offensive line, when we go back to
I think one of mine was released.
Wait, was there?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think I don't know.
That be possible? You had Jokel starting at left tackle. I had Fant starting at left tackle.
I had Gary Gilliam and Bradley Sol in there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Gary. Yeah.
I had both of them at all 5 positions.
That's weird.
Yeah.
You know,
and Ethan Posick.
We did this before Posick was even drafted. That's not possibly true.
Pretty prescient.
But yeah, I mean, obviously there'll be a lot of competition there. Then running back, where I think, you know, I don't know about you. I expect Eddie Lacy to win the starting job.
Is it going to be a starting job?
That's a good point, because you're going to see, you know, a heavy rotation at that position.
You got Rawls, Lacy, and I would hope, I think Procise is
going to... Yeah, I mean, and Procise, even if he doesn't win the starting job, is going to be heavily involved as the third down back as long as he's healthy. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to see a number of guys at that position.
I think you're going to get good play out of all of them, because I don't think there's that much pressure for any one of them to really be like the guy.
Yeah.
And the couple places a little bit deeper for me where I think I'm looking at it is wide receiver. Is this the year? I mean, look, Doug Baldwin is slotted as in as the number one wide receiver. We know what Tyler Lockett is, but is this the year that Jermaine Kearse is kind of pushed out as an every down wide receiver?
How dare you? On behalf of the Kearse crew.
This is a question.
Pushed out?
This is a question.
Is this the year that Jermaine Kearse rebounds and has the amazing DVOA year that he always has in odd numbered years? Is the question you should have asked.
Jermaine Kearse, regression to the mean. Work for him.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. That's a listener right there. That is a listener.
I don't believe
somebody
it.
Somebody just got a spot on bingo.
Yeah, we took
I
off
feel like
couple.
It's Paul Richardson's year.
But there definitely are options at receiver for people who could be playing a little bit more often than Jermaine Kearse, right?
That is accurate. There will be competition at that position.
As there will be at every position.
Obviously.
Another place that I'm curious to look at is how much of an impact does Malik McDowell have?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to do some research today, which is shockingly difficult to find. But it felt to me like viewing the games, like the Seahawks didn't get the same kind of interior pressure that they had in the past.
Yeah, that seems like a fair position.
Statistically, it seemed like their pressure is still pretty solid. But I'm curious to see, you know, they've drafted a lot of run-stuffing linemen they signed. It's been a lot of run-stuffing big defensive tackles.
And they lost Brandon Mebane, who supplied a lot of that interior pressure along with Jordan Hill in the past.
But Malik McDowell is coming in to create pressure from that spot, from the defensive tackle position. And I'm curious to see how much he actually plays and how much of an impact he has right away.
Who do you think is going to be this year's Troymaine Pope? Who is this year's Thomas Rawls, who everyone falls in love with in the fourth quarter of preseason games as a running back?
I think what is more accurate is not that, because I think that running back, there's so many running backs right now.
There's a lot of running backs.
That you're not including Troymaine Pope?
No, not including Troymaine
Pope. Is he gone?
He's with the Colts. We've talked about this.
And you know what? He's in my heart.
I feel the same
Alex
way.
Alex Collins, maybe number four.
Alex Collins certainly is a possibility for that. Chris Carson, who they drafted in the late rounds this year. And then I guess the other kid would be Mike Davis, Trey Madden, and J.D. McKissick.
I think
they are running backs more on the roster.
Yes. But most importantly, it's who is this year's Tanner McAvoy? Who's somebody who we don't expect to make the roster? Because look, there are not a lot of roster spots up for grabs, especially on offense. Who's somebody who we don't expect to make the roster who is so important in training camp and in preseason who the Seahawks can't release?
And then conversely, who's the person who you think that roster spot is not up for grabs because of their seniority, who, you know, Pete Carroll is not afraid and John Schneider are not afraid to pull the trigger and take a younger player in that spot?
Curse.
No, stop it. How dare you?
That'd be a very bold prediction.
Hashtag curse crow.
To predict that he doesn't make it through training camp.
The other thing I'm curious about is how they use all the new players in the secondary that they drafted this year. You know, the couple of safeties, Mike Tyson at cornerback, just how all those guys fit in. Then Bradley McDougal.
You got to root for Mike Tyson and Shaq. Those are just good names.
Yeah, to see if he has any punch outs, you know.
It was too obvious. I was staying away from them. That fruit was hanging too low. But how they're going to use those guys, and then Bradley McDougal, who's probably going to play in a variety of different roles, it looks like. So, also, a good bit of news on the eve of training camp. Report from Bob Condotta on Tuesday of the Seattle Times that Earl Thomas, I don't know why I introduced him again, we talked about him earlier, Earl Thomas says no restrictions to start training camp. So that's pretty awesome.
I'm going to tweet at him later and ask that same question.
Hey, it's Earl Thomas. What's his status?
What are the restrictions on Earl Thomas?
Why are the Seahawks training camp so late?
I feel like we'll only really know how Earl Thomas feels when his father comes by our tailgate again. Just to shake hands with everyone wearing an Earl Thomas jersey. Then he will tell us the truth, how he really feels, if he's ready to go.
I need to get an Earl Thomas jersey. I'm missing out on handshakes here.
You really are. All right, on that note, thanks for listening.
Are the Mariners still playing? Is it still 4-4?
The Mariners are still playing.
Wow.
Top of the third.
Oh, man. I'm excited to go watch this.
Yeah. Let's go take a look at some weird baseball. It's almost midnight.
Nothing more than late night baseball.
3 a.m. in Boston.
Yeah. A lot of people still up watching that one. On that note.
Thanks for listening. And also, thank you to our special guests here, Reese Lazarus You can see Bully tomorrow night. I think tickets are sold out, so you can't.
It's quite sold out, but we'll be back.
But so you can see Bully tomorrow night, but they will be playing tomorrow night at the Sunset.
And stay tuned for more.
Look for a very soon. Possibly by before next podcast.
There'll be news coming. And then also Chris Smith.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.